Hello, my name is Michael Demos. It's been a while since I've been in the hosting chair. With me today, I have my co-host, Brandon Churon, our president of sports. It's been great to be back in this chair to talk football, sports in general. So, Brandon, take it away for us.
Hey guys, how's everyone doing? I'm looking forward to talking about the NFL. I know that I've had a few podcasts recently with Eugene talking about the NBA playoffs, but now to get back to football, my favorite sport, I'm really looking forward to it, and it's great to have Michael back. We're gonna get into a season preview pretty much. We'll talk about week one, a few topics we want to talk about, just big things that have happened the past few months. And the first thing, obviously, I think that Michael wants to bring up, and I also want to bring up, is how we're gonna deal with COVID as NFL fans and how the players are gonna deal with it. There's going to be a lot of changes here, such as, not going to games most likely, not being able to go to the bars to watch the games, and all sorts of things. So we're going to see, how we can get the season done in a safe way, in a way where it would be great for players and fans.
When you talk about COVID, I found it hilarious. Yesterday, the New York Post came out with this huge article. I think it was 10 players on the New York Jets tested falsely positive for COVID-19. And this wasn't just in the Jets, this was around the league as well. They had several false positive tests. So my question for you, Brandon, would be, how do we combat this type of problem? How do we figure out a solution to make sure that when we do have these false positives, that we can quickly take another test to make sure that player isn't actually testing positive for COVID-19?
Yeah, it's a good point you bring up, Michael. I think that I don't know too much about, the process of testing and all that type of stuff, but I think that when we're bringing in our players to get their COVID testing, we need to be 100% sure, and we can't give any like calf measurements, about like wanting a player to be on the field for that weekend, because if we get that, football's such a contact sport that if one guy with COVID gets two teams like infected or gets in contact with all of those players, a good chance that 5 to 15 players will end up getting COVID from that exact game. So the NFL has to really make sure they're strong and take precautions about, making sure the players don't get COVID and doing everything they can, like the NBA is doing. And in contrast, the MLB, they're having issues with certain teams, like the Marlins missed some games. I think a few other teams, the Yankees Mets series was canceled because they didn't take the proper precautions. So we're gonna really have to see, because in baseball, even though it's a shortened season, I think the best team's going to make playoffs, right? But in the NFL, if you're a quarterback, if Drew Brees, let's say, misses, or not even Drew Brees because they have James Winston, if Matt Ryan misses 3 games because of COVID, because some third string running back for one of their opponents gets COVID, that's going to completely screw up the Falcons season because they only have 16 games. So we really need to make sure that we're not spreading this virus around the NFL, and we're going to take the best precautions to do it.
Well, just a side note there. I still think the Saints would be screwed if Drew Brees does go down. James Winston, I love him. He's a cool guy. He did great in college, but his career hasn't really flourished in the NFL. So maybe it will be better because he will have a better wide receiver core, but that's a discussion for another time, obviously. Let me ask you this. I've been asking a lot of people this type of question, and I was wondering, would it be possible for fans to actually come to the stadium, as in the sense that we have a lot of the suites and lofts and all these areas, right? They're closed off and in their own little bubble, technically, right? So why can't those fans who have those type of tickets come to the stadium? At least some fans would then be allowed in because they're in their own little suite. They're not in, seat by seat in the bleacher type of sections of the stadiums. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that could definitely work. For instance, like the Dallas Cowboys, they're probably selling, I would think, up to tens of thousands of every weekend, maybe even 100,000 worth of, these suites, these privileged, fans who have the money to spend on these suites. So I think that could work, and that could generate a lot of revenue for the NFL. The issue is going to be with other fans. Everyone's going to want to go to the games, right? But we're not going to have that if everyone isn't following the right precautions, wearing masks as much as they can and stuff like that. And I think that that's going to really be an issue that the NFL is going to have to deal with. But I do think that's a good point that you made, Michael, that if we can get fans in private suites and stuff like that, even if it's only a few, they'll still make money off of that. And I don't see any negatives in that.
And I hate to bring this part up too, you know, because they're not real wrestling, say the least. It's politics aside. There's the WWE, but then you have this other wrestling that's growing in America called the AEW. And they're a pretty good wrestling place. But what they're doing is they're putting people in, like, pods. So they have their bleacher seats, right? But they're making them, like, construct of bubbles, right? And obviously it would take some money and stuff, but wouldn't that be an option to put, you know, a pod of two together, a pod of four, six, all around the stadium and be like, okay, guys, this is where we will be. You know, you guys will be inside your own bubble here where we have plastics or you're covered so you're safe with just your own group. Obviously, there will be a question of how do we exit the stadium and all that with the whole entire group, but people will still be wearing a mask. Isn't that a viable option? Why aren't people thinking of this type of stuff? Or is it also because of states' regulations that might be holding this back?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. That's a good idea for sure. That the pods, it would take a lot of money. We'd have to see how it's constructed, you know, how people are going to get out of their pod, like how are they going to, you know, move from if someone wants to go to the bathroom, how are they going to go get back in their pod? You know, it's going to be a little bit of a hassle there, but I do like that idea. The thing is with the mask is that, you know, I'd love to be able to go to a game wear a mask. And I think most people, like for instance, when I go outside 99% of the time, I'm just wearing the mask because, you know, it's not that difficult, but people, when they go to NFL games, they're going to want to be drinking a beer. They're going to take the mask off for a minute. There's going to be the people who think it's a political issue, which it really isn't. It just, at least try and wear your mask. Don't be, at least if you go outside, you know, wear it 95% of the time. It's not that difficult. But the people, NFL fans, are going to be like, oh, I don't need to be doing this. Then people get drunk. And then it's going to be difficult because of how many fans come. But I think, you know, maybe something like social distancing stadiums, you know, you have instead of 100,000 fans every game or whatever the stadium fits between 80 and 100, we only have 40,000 at the game. Maybe, I mean, that could be a viable option. But it's really going to come down to what the NFL best sees fit. And I think at least, like, I know for the first 2 weeks, I think most NFL teams aren't going to have fans for the first month. But we'll have to see. But I think, you know, maybe this season, even though I like your idea a lot, and if the NFL did it, I think it would be really cool. It might be best, you know, just to hold off on the fans just so we could see football. Because, I mean, that's probably – even though I think the NFL generates the best fan experience, I think it's the best sport to go and be a fan of, you know, to – be at the game and stuff like that. But I think, you know, this season we might need to just understand that we're going through more serious things. And yeah, we should probably just, you know, accept that we can't go to the games.
And with that being said, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back as soon as we have our sponsor ad. Our next topic is going to be about the Jamal Adams trade from the New York Jets to the Seattle Seahawks. Obviously, I'm a Jets fan, and amazingly, Brandon Chiron is a Seattle Seahawks fan, even though he resides in the great state of New York and the most amazing city in the world, New York City, but somehow he's still a Seahawks fan, which still baffles me to this day. And I know him for about 10 years now. But besides that, I think history will show that the Jets won this trade by far was my first thought of it. But more than I think of it, I'm not sure if they won it. You know, they gave up not much. But with COVID-19, a lot of these football players in college aren't playing. So there isn't really a point of, say, a way to scout these players and these future draft picks that they have. Are they really going to be that valuable? That's the question. Like, how long is COVID-19 going to last? How long is this period where we're not going to see, you know, the idea of college football? So how are we going to scout and how are we going to get these players right? So that's where I'm a little nervous with this type of trade that happened. But with that being said, Brandon, the floor is yours.
Okay, yeah. So I talked about this a bit in the NBA podcast just because it was the first thing that came up in my mind, even though we were talking basketball. You know, this Jamal Adams trade, it was a big trade. So the Seahawks gave up Bradley McDougal, a first-round pick in the next 2 years, and a third-round pick for Jamal and a fourth round pick. Now, I think both teams won this trade. Sure, people are going to say two first round picks, that's a lot for safety who wants out. And I totally agree. But the Seahawks are going to be picking between, at worst, 24 and 32. They're going to be they're going to make the playoffs, especially with the 17 playoff. There's a very strong possibility, it's very unlikely they're going to miss the playoffs with Russell Wilson, where they've had 8 straight winning seasons. So for the Seahawks perspective, I think that it's going to be a great trade because, they have Quandre Diggs and they have Marquise Blair that can move to the slot. And Jamal Adams can move all around. He can stop the run.
And he's young.
Yeah, he plays like a
wide receiver. Yeah, he's young. He can do everything. So I think that's something there. Like, who cares if you gave – yeah.
I was looking at this. He would have led the Seahawks on sacks last year, 6.5. Jadeveon Clowney is a great player, but he was a little bit injury prone, and he's not. He's more of a run stopper than a pass rusher because he's getting doubled so much. So for Jamal, I can get in the box. He could play a Cam Chancellor like role, and when Cam Chancellor, who is one of my favorite all time players, was in the Legion of Boom with Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, he was the enforcer on that defense. He made teams afraid to throw the ball, and Jamal Adams is a very similar player to Cam Chancellor. And might even be a little bit better in coverage and a little bit faster, even though I think Cam is still I don't even know. It's very close. They're both similar players. So the Seahawks gave up a lot, and the Jets are going to get a good player in Bradley McDougal who can also do it all. He can stop the run a little bit. He makes plays. He jumps off the screen a little bit. He's had 3 or 4 interceptions last year. He's a good player. So it's a good trade for both teams. I think the Jets are growing. But with COVID, like you talked about with the draft perspectives, I think for next year's draft, if there isn't even a college football season, which with the Big Ten and Pac-12 being canceled, there's a good chance that won't happen. The good thing is that from their freshman years, there's so much overwhelming talent in football these days that guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and Stingley, the quarterback from LSU, the corner, they were already, coveted as top 10 picks the second they walked on the college campus. But the Jets, the thing about them is that they're going to be picking in the late 20s. So they're going to get some good players and they're going to add to their core. But I do agree with what you say in a way that because we're not getting that 12 games of film that we would normally get, most likely this year, it's going to be a little bit more of a crapshoot. But I still think, first round picks are first round picks, and NFL scouts are good enough to know what they're getting usually.
And let me talk to you about the Jets for a second. Let me get your opinion here. Overall, the Jets are a pretty decent team now. They're building themselves up and all that. But there's one group inside the team that I think is vital. And there was a couple articles for the last several weeks on this. The cornerbacks. That is where, in my opinion, the Jets are a little weak, unlike the Seahawks. And is that going to be the thing that breaks the Jets, is that the thing that's going to cause them to lose games? Your safeties now are pretty decent. They're not Jamal Adams style, but they're there. They're strong defenders. But cornerbacks, that's what worries me. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think with the Jets, their main issue the last few years has been the trench play. I think their defensive lines had some talent, but they traded away Leonard Williams, a few other guys. And the offensive line's been their main concern, which they addressed in the draft with Becton in the first round. But if I'm looking at the Jets, their cornerback situation, they drafted Bryce Hall out of Virginia. I mean, he could be good, but he's a young player. And I'm just looking right now at their depth chart because I don't have it off the top of my head. But Pierre Desir played well in Indianapolis. I know he's a prototypical big cornerback. And, guys like that, they can be productive against number ones. They have the prototype to match up with the Julio Jones, Well, Stephon Diggs is more of a smaller guy, but, these like number ones, DeAndre Hopkins, whatever. And so I think, corner might be an issue for them, but they're going to have to see other young guys step up. I'm pretty sure they had a young corner who's been pretty good. I honestly forgot off the top of my head their second corner, but, I don't think their secondary was that terrible last year. And we're going to have to see other young guys step up, but, they drafted that safety out of California, ran like a 4.3, and it's a young team. It might be a hard team because, the veteran teams are going to do better with COVID, I think, because they're going to have more experience. But we'll see how the Jets secondary does,
Yeah. Now, let me ask you your predictions just overall in the sense of defense in the AFC East. what do you see there? You know, when it comes to who's going to win it, who's going to do well, and all that type of stuff.
Okay, so I have the Bills still winning the division. One thing we're going to talk about later is, I mean, because their defense still stacked. One team we're going to talk about later is Cam Newton signing with the Patriots. That's going to be very interesting, to say the least, because they don't have the vertical threats of receiver, but they have a lot of – Cam can do a lot of underneath stuff that Tom Brady did while giving them a dynamic athlete at the quarterback position if he is a starter. The Dolphins are going to be improved at defense a lot. You know, they got Shaq Lawson from the Bills. They signed Byron Jones, who's one of the best corners in the NFL. Cowboys, and they have a great young coach and Brian Flores. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know if we're going to see the NFC. Defensively, I think that Patriots might take a minor step back because they got rid of so many pieces. They lost so many guys like Kyle Benway to the Lions, a few other people. So I think, you know, the Bills are going to definitely be the best defense in that division. And probably if Josh Allen could play well, how about you?
I don't know. I was going to ask you this, but we'll get into this probably maybe at the end about the predictions for the whole entire season, where people stand and all that.
We did a week one prediction, so you can chime in on that, and I'll go through game by game.
Oh, yeah, of course. So we'll get into that later, but first let's get into the Jane, you know, Winston first, just a second, because I know we talked about it earlier, but your opinion, you know, we saw the Saints last year. They got decimated at first when Drew Brees was out. And then all of a sudden, magic happened. They started winning games. Then he comes back, and everything was great. Now, we see this all around the league. It's vital to have a good, proper backup. But in the case of the Saints, you have someone who's was a starter, was all-star in college and all that. And then you have, of course, other teams around the league that have the same thing. You know, decent backups, but you're not sure where they're going to stand. The Jets have, you know, someone that's all right. We're not really sure yet, you know, as he passes prime. But then we have the Patriots. Now, this is an interesting story. Now, they lose Brady, the GOAT of football. There's no doubt. I mean, I may be a Jets fan, but Brady is the GOAT of football. He is the best that I've ever played the game, even though he has a lot of scandals. But now you have Newton coming in, you know, but he doesn't have a real backup behind him. So what's going to happen if he gets injured? You know, obviously he's a great QB. He didn't have all the right pieces in Carolina, and that's a critical thing. You know, like he didn't have the best wide receiving core all the time, or he had players that were injured and all this. But he's going to the Patriots, who still have a lot of good wide receivers, good tight ends. They have a great front offensive line. So what's your thoughts on this?
Okay, so I have a few points here. So with the Patriots, I mean, they were high on Jarrett Stidham, who's a second-year quarterback at Auburn. He started at Baylor, you know, he's got prototypical size and athleticism. He didn't jump off the screen when he was playing, but, you know, Cam's going to probably win the job, I would think, but they might actually start with Stidham, which is crazy to think. But, you know, they want to get Cam adjusted to their offense. And with their receiving core, they have N'Keal Harry and Julian Edelman. They lost Philip Dorsett. And Edelman's great, but, I mean, he's a clutch performer, one of the most primetime receivers we've seen in a while, even though he doesn't put up crazy stats. Every Super Bowl he's in, he jumps off the screen. So, I think Cam, he's not the best deep ball thrower. He's more of, you know, a quick pass type of guy. He can run RPOs, you know, read options. He can run a little bit. And I think that, you know, he'll probably win the starting. I mean, he'll win the starting job. I think he'll start at some point. And he'll have some success. But Cam, you know, he's coming off of multiple injuries. He's in his mid-30s or early 30s. And they don't have great tight end play, so it might be a bit of a struggle, but I think he's going to make them interesting, give them a chance to make the playoffs. And although the Patriots are actually, in my opinion, they're lacking a tight end, you know, they don't have Gronk anymore. They had Ben Watson, I think, last year. He's like retired. He's like 41 or whatever. So the Patriots are obviously going to take a step back, but I think that, that Cam should have some minor success, and that you know, we're going to go and see what happens. And then with the Saints, we were talking about Jameis a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's had great weapons in Tampa. And I think that Jameis, you know, he had eye surgery to fix his, he was making too many blind spot mistakes, which is pretty interesting and kind of obvious when you throw 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. It shows you the physical tools to be an absolute baller, but you're making dumb mental mistakes for a quarterback. Right. If he had 18 interceptions, people would say they don't like interceptions, sure, but I mean, if you're having 30, that's just ridiculous. So I think that they're going to have to clean it up. And, you know, we saw last year Teddy Bridgewater. I went to the Seahawks Saints game, and Teddy, you know, he was a game manager, but he led them to a win. You know, he played very well. He was a solid game manager, and now he's a big contract in Carolina. So I think Jameis, if Drew Brees does go down again, because he is 41, I believe, by the time the season starts, something like that, Jameis will be able to, you know, he'll be able to do okay with all the weapons, with Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders. You know, they have enough weapons, great offensive line to get the job done. But yeah, I think that'll be good for Jameis to learn under a guy like Drew Brees. So I agree with you there.
All right, let me ask you this question. You know, the season came out early in the springtime, who was going to play who. And let me just read you the top five hardest teams, all right, that have the hardest schedule. You have the Broncos, who have the number one. Then you have the Jets, the Raiders, the Giants, and the Rams. What's interesting here is these guys have the hardest schedules. And last year, only two teams there, three, yeah, I'm not going to even say the Broncos did that well, actually. So only two teams had minor success. You have the Rams, who obviously did pretty decently, and then you have the Jets, who, after the first dismal half of the season, had a 7-1 for the second half of the season. They were the team to beat, pretty much. So this is coming in now. They have the hardest schedule. You know, they didn't have the full chance as many teams do with a full training session with the rookies and everything because of COVID-19. So how are they going to adapt, you know, with this type of schedule? And then let me read you, before you answer that question, the teams that have the easiest schedule. Number one is the Colts. Number two is the Titans. Number three is the Bears. Number four is the Browns. And last but not least, the Lions. These teams typically, besides the Titans, who had a crazy run, did pretty decently, you know, except for the Browns, who struggled in the latter half of the season, and the Lions, who played all right. They weren't the greatest. They weren't the worst. But they're going to have easy schedules compared to the five teams that I talked about. So how do they really make this work, especially when you're the Jets and your QB is now going on his third season here? It's one of the most important seasons. It's make or break. Are you going to be that franchise QB or not? Then you have the Rams, who everyone's expecting to win a championship, and they still haven't won it. Like, what is going on? You have the right players, you have the right format. What is going on there? And then the Giants, who are expecting to keep rebuilding. Is it really the best thing that they have the hardest schedule? And then obviously you have the Broncos, who probably one of the best defensive teams that we've seen in a long time, but offense has been a question mark for the last several years since Peyton Manning retired. So your thoughts on all this?
Okay, all right. So let's start with the Jets. We talked the first podcast we did about them, and I had them at 7-9. I think that Sam Darnold's going to be good. I like the way that he plays. I think that when he's healthy, he's a baller, but I'm taking off one win because of the Jamal trade and because they're not getting that preseason to, you know, figure out what their young pieces are going to do. We still need to see a number one receiver. I guess they have Quincy Enunwa. They lost Robbie Anderson. They have Denzel Mims out of Baylor, a few other guys, Jameson Crowder, but, you know, none of those guys are necessarily number one receivers. So we're going to, you know, that's going to be tough for them. And then we talked about, you know, their cornerback, their depth there might be a little bit questionable besides Pierre Desir. And their defense is, you know, is pretty young. You know, a lot of players have things that they need to prove. So obviously, because they're not a veteran team, they're going to have some issues, you know, rebuilding that defense. So I see some, I see them, you know, maybe having some minor struggles, even though they'll be competitive, I think. Then we have the Broncos. That's an interesting team because Drew Lock, you know, they were shuffling quarterbacks first 12, 13 weeks. Drew Lock came in and played very well. And he was a pretty good quarterback in Missouri, and now they have Courtland Sutton, who emerged as a very good receiver. They have they signed Melvin Gordon. They drafted Jerry Jeudy, and I forgot the guy's name, but this fast slot receiver out of Penn State. So, you know, they'll be pretty interesting, but they're in the same division as the Chiefs and the Chargers, who are absurdly talented, and the Raiders, who are similar teams to them. So we have those guys. And then I guess going on the easy, I'm just going to try and remember what you said. I know the easiest schedule.
If you want me to tell you the easy schedule, I can tell you them again. Absolutely. We have the Colts, Titans, Bears, Browns, and Lions.
Okay. All right. So Colts, they signed Phillip Rivers, and they have a great, you know, offensive and defensive line. They traded for DeForest Buckner, who's he's a very good defensive player. You know, he wreaks havoc. So, you know, that's going to be interesting, but we need to see if Phillip Rivers passes his prime. He had a bad season, and he's nearing 40. You know, that's not a great combo for a quarterback. So we're going to go and see how he does with the Colts. But, you know, then again, they drafted very well the past 5 years, or more like 3 years, actually, since Ballard and their new coach came in. So, you know, we'll see with them. The Titans, I mean, I'm not 100% sold on them. I think they have a lot of talent, but I don't know if I trust Ryan Tannehill in big moments. So that's going to be, I think they'll be, you know, fighting for a wild card spot, which is totally fine. You know, that means that they're an average to a little bit above average team. And that's always good to be an NFL team. You know, making the playoffs in the NFL is not an easy thing to do, even though we're getting one more team this year. So it's a little bit easier. It's still going to be a competition. And we have to see if Derrick Henry can duplicate his success. Then the Browns, you know, we're going to see if Baker Mayfield is matured even more. I think that, you know, last season they were similar to the Bucs this season. They were the offseason champion, but the Bucs are getting Tom Brady. There's a difference between that and Baker Mayfield. The Bucs, even though I think, you know, it's annoying when a non-successful team gets so much hype in the offseason for getting two veterans who are near retirement kind of, and Gronk, you know. It'll be interesting to see how they do, but, you know, the Bucs are a team that I think they definitely make the Super Bowl. You know, I think if the Seahawks are not going to make it, I might lean towards the Bucs making it, because of how much talent they have with their wide receiver core and Tom Brady and a young defense. So, yeah, the Browns, anyways, I think they have a chance at a wild card. You know, they'll be fighting with Pittsburgh for the number two spot in the division. And the Rams, we're talking about having a hard schedule. They lost Todd Gurley, who kind of fell at the face of the earth a little bit. I think him going to Atlanta, if he is healthy, you know, even though it was annoying when I brought up this analogy before, too, I think when people were talking about, you know, how Todd Gurley was an absolute god and he was running all over my Seahawks a few years ago, the 1 year he missed the
playoffs. Oh, yes.
Yeah, they were talking about how, you know, how amazing he was and, you know, for their fantasy teams. And I was like, oh, God, come on, guys. Like, you're sitting here watching your 3-13 team. Like, stop rooting for Todd Gurley. It's annoying. But, you know, I think the Rams are going to be interesting. You know, we'll see if Jared Goff, he had a not great season last year. I think he has the talent. I like Jared Goff, but we'll see if, you know, he can carry them to getting back to Super Bowl contention. It's an extremely tough division with Seahawks and Niners, who are both legit Super Bowl contenders with them. And the Rams are going to see if if they could stay healthy. And they have the defense personnel with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. Those are arguably two top five guys at, you know, as NFL defenders. So we'll see. But one team I want to bring up that has a super easy schedule that wasn't in that thing, at least at the start, not the end, but the first seven games, the 49ers literally play six teams they should annihilate, and the Eagles, who also, you know, they're unproven. So they have an easy schedule. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. But I think, you know, again, veteran teams are going to start out stronger, and teams can have Super Bowl hangovers. So we'll see how the 49ers respond. But yeah, that's a good point what you brought up. You know, it's going to affect young teams. It's quarantine for sure.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to discuss something that I really want to discuss with you, Brandon. It's the new playoff format that's coming in this season. I think that's something that we really need to talk about just for a little bit, because it's quite vital now that we see this whole entire new type of thing that's coming on. With that being said, we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, so we're back. So the first thing that I want to talk about, I mean, one thing that happened yesterday that shocked me is one of my favorite all-time players, even though he flipped off my entire organization, Earl Thomas, got released by the Ravens. Now, Earl is a 31-year-old safety at this point, I believe. He's still one of the best coverage guys in the NFL, but, you know, being 31 and coming off of two serious injuries in his career, he lost a step, and he had this incident with his brother in last season, and then he got in a fight at practice and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to him. But he got cut by the Baltimore Ravens. They're not cut. He's not going to be on the roster week one. So teams like the Cowboys, who have some secondary issues, who want to compete for a Super Bowl, and that's Earl's, you know, home state and his hometown team, might be interested. And I guess I want to bring up to you, Michael, what's your opinion about giving players second chances? Because, you know, I've always talked about how much I want the Seahawks to sign Antonio Brown. I still do because of how talented he is. But that guy's a complete nutball. And, you know, Earl, he's had his ups and downs, but he's not at that point. But then again, you know, getting released by two teams, or like changing two teams in your early 30s, which is old for safety, or not too old, but, you know, it's past their prime a little bit. I want to know, you know, what do you think about, you know, his chances of getting picked up, and where do you think the best fit would be?
Well, let me answer your first question about should they really get a second chance? Now, obviously, Antonio Brown is a completely different story than the regular players that we've seen. You know, he's really crazy. You don't know what he's going to do. He's unpredictable. But then you have players like Michael Vick, okay? We all know his backstory. One of the best QBs to play the game, fastest speed, you know, the first person in Madden's history, the video game, to get a 99 overall ranking, right? Then he has the whole entire thing about the pit bulls and the fights and all that. And then he gets his second chance, and he performs amazing. He played for the Jets and then a couple other teams. But we see him, you know, he was a player that did his time, came back, and show that there is qualities of redemption in players if given the chance. He was humbled. He had his head down always. So there are times where we see this humility and we ask, say, all right, let's give it to them. And then we have certain positions where it's like, all right, so he got into a fight. Thomas, for example. Now, okay, he was released by the Ravens, and I thought this was just absolutely ridiculous. They were fighting. They've had beef for a while now. But to be honest, it's a beef. Can't the front office and do something about it? Can't the coaching staff not do something about this? It's up to them to keep their players in check, not to make sure the squabbles there are put to rest. Instead, they release Thomas, which is absurd. You know, what was this beef about to begin with? All I hear about is it was a squabble. It was a beef they were having for a while now. There's nothing what it was about. Now, if it was something that was happening in their personal lives, like, I don't know, a scandal or something, then that's a different story. Obviously, you got to separate them and trade them, whatever the case is. But to lose someone who was vital to your team's success, who was giving your team the best for the defense, is crazy to think of. That's just my opinion there. And I definitely think he deserves a second chance. I would love to see him on the Cowboys like you were talking about. That was the first team, once I heard that he was being released, I was like, oh, he's got to go to the Dallas Cowboys now. There's no way he doesn't. Like, the team needs defensive help. And he's, in my mind, the perfect match with the coaching staff and everyone there. You know, there are a couple other teams I was thinking that he may be a good suit for. Would be the Titans. That really would elevate the Titans there. I mean, they were great in the playoffs. They were amazing. And to continue building that success there, their defense, if they got Thomas, I think they become, you know, they get an extra win. They become a 10-6 team instead of a 9-7 team this coming up year, which is my opinion at least. Other teams that I think could really use him is, of course, we have the Dolphins. I think, you know, they struggle. But with Thomas, they have a better chance on defense, a real veteran there that could help with all the young players that they have on their team. But in my opinion, you know, the idea of not giving players second chances, especially if this was a squabble over a beef, over we don't even know what, is absurd. And the front office should have handled this much better. Like, for anything it is, that's your job, the front office. It's not just to sit idly and say, okay, we're going to trade this guy because we don't like this beef that they're having and they're fighting with each other. Man up, take the situation in hand because you're the front office and you're paying these guys millions of dollars. So can, you can't figure it out? You're going to trade assets away just to trade a player away just to get something done. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there might be something more brewing here. And I agree with what you're saying. You know, he's going to help any team fill that rangy safety that he used to be. That covers the whole entire secondary, you know, lets players play in the box, stuff like that. Sure, he's lost a step in the past few years, in the past year or so, coming off that another like ACL injury or whatever. And I did see a stat that might be imperative to what, you know, happened, is that he was the 60th ranked safety past week 10, but the Ravens were coasting at that point, you know. I mean, sure, like whatever, you know, they might be giving up some garbage time yards when they're up by 30 against the Bengals and the Jets, no offense, on their games, you know, like it's like, sure, he might have that those issues, but if he goes to the Dolphins or the Titans, you know, he might give them a really dynamic safety duo. And one thing I would say is that the Ravens, they're still going to be Super Bowl contenders, and you know, a lot of people are predicting them to win it all this year.
And I don't see that. Sorry, I don't see it. They're still too young.
Lamar Jackson hype, and I love Lamar Jackson. I think he's a great player. I think that he's probably the third best quarterback behind Wilson and Mahomes, but that's completely unbiased, too. I literally would say that those other guys are so much more polished throwing the ball, so we need to see more from Lamar in that department, even though he improved. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he has left. But then again, you know, if Lamar Jackson did got in a fist fight with somebody, I don't think he's getting released next day. So there's something more to be said about this. And I agree, you know, giving players second chances is huge. And if the Seahawks didn't just trade for Jamal Adams, regardless of what Earl's stats or injury concerns might be, I would be 100% on the bringing back Seattle bandwagon. But at this point, with him and Quandre Diggs, they don't really need Earl right now. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I'd love to see guys like Earl and Antonio Brown get back in the league. And even guys like Colin Kaepernick deserve a second chance, regardless of what your political views are, of getting back on the field.
But he's not that good. You know, that's the thing. I always thought he was a huge hype, you know, like Colin Kaepernick. All right, so he can throw the ball deep once in a while. Like, he doesn't have a short game. He doesn't have an accuracy. That's my problem with him.
5 years ago, he was so dynamic running the ball. And he's not a great deep ball guy, but, I mean, it is what it is. But he's good enough to be a backup quarterback. But then again, I will say completely, regardless of what your stance is of the kneeling and the national anthem, which I personally disagree with, I would just like to say that, you know, I think that the issue with Colin Kaepernick is that who's going to want that distraction for a backup quarterback? That's the issue that we have to deal with.
Well, I also want to say with the idea, I don't think he wants to be a backup quarterback. He thinks he's so good that he has to be an automatic starter, and that's just not the case.
He put up
the numbers. He's at best a backup.
Yeah, four or five years ago, the 49ers went 4-12. He put up good numbers. He was like 16-4 touchdown to interception ratio, something like that. But yeah, he's not a starter at this point. But what I'm just saying is that, you know, the distraction thing, he's more of a distraction because he's not going to start. Earl Thomas, Antonio Brown, these are game changing Hall of Fame players. So, right. You know, that's the difference there. So, you know, we'll see. I'm still all about it, about giving Antonio Brown and Earl Thomas another shot. I think Earl will get a shot. Antonio needs to clear up more of his issues. But then again, you know, it comes down to overwhelming talent, too. You know, we saw the Seahawks, one of their corners, got pretty lucky to get away from this incident with the Quinnen Dunbar, DeAndre Baker incident. Most likely, Quinnen Dunbar had something to do with that, and he got away with it. So, I mean, a sick part of me is like, oh, cool. Like, we get a top five pro football talk pro football graded corner last year, but at the same time, you know, I don't know. I mean, people respond to their mistakes. And the one thing that I want to say about Michael Vick before we move on is that Michael Vick did something pretty heinous with the dog fighting thing. I'm a dog owner. I love my dog more than anything. But like now Michael Vick seems like such a good person, and he learned so much from every mistake he made. He donates to animal causes. He talks about social justice issues. He's very even keeled, you know, he's a big analyst now. And he came back with the Eagles and led them to the playoffs a few years. And Michael Vick changed his life. So I'm hoping that all these players that might make a mistake, you know, the main point is, you know, hopefully they rebound with it and they turn out like Michael Vick did, where they can be a role model to young football players everywhere and, contribute in society. So
Let's go on the top five QBs. You named your three of them already, and I disagreed with one of them because I think you were being a little biased with your Seahawks. But That's all you.
So I'll do my top five quarterbacks. I have Wilson and Mahomes neck and neck. I'll give it to Mahomes because he's coming off that Super Bowl year, and what he's done in his first 2 years, ridiculously good. So Patrick Mahomes, number one. Number two is Russell Wilson because he's in a run-based offense and has put up Hall of Fame numbers. He's the past 5 years, he's the reason why they're winning. Not the Legion of Boom. Him and Bobby Wagner running that team. And the first two, three years, it was all the Legion of Boom and Marshawn Lynch. Now that that group has disintegrated a little bit, the defense isn't the same. It isn't the arguably best defense of all time that it was in 2014 when we won the Super Bowl. He's leading them, and he's putting up great numbers. He would have won MVP last year if Lamar Jackson didn't go absolutely off. But the Seahawks have won, like, I think 7 of their 8 wins were by one score last year. That's because of Russell Wilson leading them and putting them on his back. And I hope the Seahawks, I've said it a bunch of times, I hope they get out of their, you know, run-based offense and really let Russ, you know, do work. I like Chris Carson. He's a back-to-back 1,000-year rusher. That's awesome. I hope that, you know, he could still contribute, and I like the guy a lot. But it needs to be Russell Wilson and getting the ball to playmakers like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who are also, you know, star receivers. So Russell's number two. I'll go through this pretty quick. Okay, Lamar's number three. He's coming off an amazing year. He still has work to do as a passer, but he's still a very good passer. He needs to get to being a great passer of the ball. Number four is Tom Brady. Tom didn't have receivers in New England. He's going to get that in Tampa. He's getting Gronk back. He might be a little bit off the clip. You know, his arm might not be as great as it was, but when he's throwing the ball to Jacoby Myers and Keo Harry as number two guys, who are both super unproven young guys, he's going to have some struggles. And number five, I thought about this for a while, it's still going to be Drew Brees. Drew, even though they did well with Teddy, came back and, you know, put up crazy numbers then the last season. And he even, you know, led them back in that playoff game against the Vikings, which they lost because their defense couldn't stop Kirk Cousins. So there's that. Other guys that I would want to mention quickly, if I'm just steamrolling it over, would be, you know, in consideration is Wentz. Aaron Rodgers has a crazy arm. You know, he's going to be great. Wentz also led them to the playoffs. Deshaun Watson is a great leader. Matt Ryan's also, you know, been doing it, been putting up absurd numbers past 5 years, regardless of team success, whether they're a contender that year or not a contender. Then I have Stafford and Dak to finish off my top 10. How about you?
I don't know about Stafford and all that there, but my top five, I have to go Mahomes, always. I mean, this guy just got his 10-year contract right now, making bank. He's set for life. He brought them the Super Bowl. He has one of the best arms in this league, obviously. But I've always been a Drew Brees fan. He always, doesn't matter what year it is, doesn't matter if it's a down year for him, his stats are still going to beat everyone hand to hand. The only person that had better stats than him when they were competing was Peyton Manning, when they would compete for how many touchdowns a year you would get, and that's pretty much a big component. I mean, he has not a real running game, but when he needs to run, he can still run, and he's up there in age. So for me, he's number two. And then I got to go with two players that I disagree where you put them. I think Wilson is amazing QB. He doesn't get the credit he deserves, but I think he's a 3 or 4. You know, I think Aaron Rodgers and him are tied for the 3rd and 4th spot. Rodgers consistently puts up record Hall of Fame numbers. You know, he learned from the great Brett Favre, even though there was turmoil and all that between them. But he learned. He was the next in line. He learned how to play the game properly and to be that successful of a QB. Then you have Wilson, who has probably Pete Carroll, who's the best coach that you'll see besides Belichick, obviously. But you see this successful chance, and those two, I think, get the 3rd and 4th slot. Obviously, I have to put number 5, Tom Brady. He's the GOAT. But he is up there in age now, and, you know, he hasn't had the best success as other teams have had in the last 3 years. It's mainly his team that's been carrying him whenever he's been making mistakes. So he's still a great QB, but we still have to see what happens this year with so many young players. It's too much to handle. And if I was going to keep going on, I think, you know, Allen of the Buffalo Bills, he is a great QB. He's putting up stat numbers that are insane to think about. You know, it's crazy that he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves, because he is obviously playing for the Buffalo Bills. Any team in Buffalo doesn't get the credit that they deserve. You know, they have, of course, a hockey team there, the Sabres, who are play have some of the best hockey players there are, but obviously they don't get the recognition. For some reason Buffalo always gets.
They keep tanking, though. They keep they haven't made the playoffs in like 10
That's
years.
True. But they have, like, amazing all-star players on there. It's crazy to think that Buffalo, for some reason, just hides talent away, and they haven't had success. But maybe we'll see this change now with Allen. And then, of course, I have to give Lamar Jackson his shout-out at number 7. You know, he's a great player. He has great speed and everything, but when it comes to throwing the ball, I don't think he's that accurate. I'm not on the hype train of Lamar Jackson. I mean, last year I was crazy because I had him for fantasy football, and I was like, everyone was laughing at me. Why are you choosing this guy? Chose him. He had the season that he had. So for me, it was great. You know, it was like, I told you guys, I know what I was talking about when it came to that. Then I have to go with Darnold. I mean, yes, he struggled 2 years. People haven't seen, you know, the record to show it. But if you look at his stats are really good when it comes to ratio of touchdowns to interceptions, completion rates, and especially last year with the last flash of the last 8 games that he played, 7-1. He was throwing touchdowns. He was throwing yards like it was nothing. Like, he can compete with the best of the QBs at number 8 there. And then we have to go out to the Rams with Goff. You know, like, still one of the best. You know, he's really talented. He knows what he's doing, and you can't go wrong with him. He's consistently always going to produce and be productive. Then, of course, I think at number 10 is Newton. I still think he's one of the best, even though he's struggled. He's always had injuries. He's led the Carolina Panthers a lot. And, like, the stats that he has aren't, you know, I don't consider them Hall of Fame level as many people would for QB standards. But he's had a hell of a season, a hell of a run, and he's definitely going to be there for the legends for the Panthers. Probably will get his number retired by the Panthers, in my opinion. He's led them to success and put them back into the word. You know, like, people are like, oh, the Carolina Panthers now. You never heard of that before Newton. You know, they had Hall of Famer wide receivers, but that was it.
Yeah.
So those are my top 10. But okay, my top 5 are sealed for sure.
So the one thing that I think Aaron Rodgers is a very interesting one. He's went 13-3 last year, but he got demolished by the Niners twice. And one of the things that I want to say about, you know, Aaron is that, you know, he's putting up great numbers, sure, but he's not taking as many hits because he wants to not throw interceptions. And in some cases, that's not great. Cause, you know, you see Russell Wilson, he'll be down to, you know, a third string tackle and his top receiver out, and he'll still be, you know, urging every bit of will to have them, you know, win a slugfest against the Niners when Aaron Rodgers might struggle a little bit. And that might be the fact that, you know, outside of Devontae Adams, they don't have any big weapons. And the one thing that I want to say is that about – it's all opinion-based. I mean, like, Marshawn had Cam at number 2, and I don't think anybody would put him there at this point. And it's all opinionated. But I'd say between Josh Allen and Lamar, both those guys are my favorite quarterbacks coming out of that draft class with Rosen, Mayfield, and Darnold. And I love Josh Allen, too. You know, I think that he's got a crazy arm and stuff. But in my opinion – him and Lamar, I think Lamar is completion wise, like percentage, because Josh is only at 56% completion percentage. It shows that, you know, Josh Allen has a lot more work to do than Lamar does, in my personal opinion, because of the fact that, you know, Lamar has, you know, been able to, you know, complete all the short passes when Josh Allen really just has that massive arm. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I just wanted to give my opinion there that I do think that Lamar right now might still be a more polished passer, but it's all opinionated. And like you said, you know, with Drew Brees, it's hard to argue, even though Drew Brees is 40 at this point and his arm might be going a little bit, like, it's still hard to argue. You know, if someone puts him there second, you know, then there's no way you can, you know, debate it because he's still putting up these crazy numbers. So it's good that we got our opinions in there. And now I think we should do a week one predictions and then finish up on the playoff format.
Yeah. So let's take a short little break. And then we'll come back to do our week one predictions. But I think we don't have enough time in this podcast, at least, to talk about the playoff format. But we'll definitely do one in the next couple of days for y'all who are watching us. And we appreciate everyone who watches and listens to us. We'll definitely have that one in the next couple of days.
We're back. So we're going to start with our week one predictions, which I know Marshawn, Austin and I did. So first game, we have Texans and Chiefs. I have the Chiefs. Michael, you want to?
Oh, I obviously have the Chiefs. Big Mahomes fan here, so let's go Chiefs.
All right, cool. Next game, we have Seahawks-Falcons. I obviously have the Seahawks.
It's the Seahawks against the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons have proved that they're defensively ready for this season.
Okay, cool. So then we have the Buccaneers and Saints. I think it should be a good game. I have the Saints winning, though.
This is going to be the first showdown between Drew Brees and Brady in the same conference and the same division. I got to give it to Drew Brees. I got to have faith in my man.
Okay, so now we have Eagles-Redskins. Pretty easy here. I have Eagles, you know.
You know what? This is where I'm going to differ with you. I think it's the Redskins. I think, you know, they're exciting now. They got new things happening there, so I'm ready to see what happens.
Oh, my God.
And we can't call them Redskins anymore, by the way. Apparently, we got to call them the Washington whatevers.
Oh, God. We were committing PC suicide there.
I know, right there. It was political suicide, guys. You got to be careful. We can't say Redskins there.
Washington football team, you have winning. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We have the Ravens playing the Browns week one. I obviously have the Ravens.
Ravens versus Browns, yeah, it's Ravens all the way.
Then we have Jets and Bills.
I got to go with my home team, the Jets. I think the reason this is because the last year when they played against the Bills for both games, they were tight. It was closely competitive. It could have gone either way. I think they split the series, right?
No, the Bills won. Maybe week 17 when the Bills were resting their starters, the Jets might have won.
Yeah. But the first game of the season, they lost by 1 point. So, I mean, like, they're a close competitive game, and that's something to watch there. So, I got the Jets there. You?
Yeah. I have the Bills. I mean, just because I think they're a more complete team, and the Jets don't have this preseason. But, you know, we'll see. And then I have Raiders-Panthers week one. I am going with the Raiders because, yeah. I'm just going to go into
that. Yeah, Raiders as well for me on that.
Yeah. Then we have Bears-Lions. I have the Bears.
Oh, yeah, of course, the Bears. I'm always a huge Bears fan. I think they're going to do great this year. Hopefully, let's go Bears.
He's any good. I mean, I already, you know, I talked enough trash about Trubisky the last year. People were saying he's good. Now that people say he sucks, I don't need to talk trash about him. So.
I still think he's a good QB. I think he shows all-star caliber at times, so I'm rooting for him.
Yeah. All right, so then we have Jags, Colts in Jacksonville. I have the Colts winning.
Oh, obviously the Colts.
Yeah. All right. Packers, Vikings in Minnesota. I have the Vikings winning.
I have the Packers. I'm a huge Aaron Rodgers fan. Let's go Rodgers.
And then I have Dolphins, Patriots. I have the Patriots winning this one. It's because they're in New England.
You know what? I'm going to throw another curveball here. Wild accusation here that the Dolphins are going to smack the Patriots down and really have a big win.
Okay, so this one's an interesting one. So Chargers and Bengals play week one. I originally picked the Bengals, but because there's no preseason, they're throwing Joe Burrow in the fire. So because I want to get the most wins possible for our predictions, I'm actually revising it before week one. So I have the Chargers winning now because of the fact that
I think Joe Burrow is an amazing QB. He can adapt to anything, so it's Bengals all the way for me.
That's bold, yeah. All right, cool. So I'm going to write that down because that's only like obvious one. Michael picked the Bengals. Okay, cool. All right, Niners-Cardinals and Santa Clara. I have the Niners winning.
Oh, obviously, Cardinals haven't been able to prove anything. And I think the spread is like 7 above for the Niners.
Yeah. I mean, Kyler Murray's pretty interesting, but, you know, we'll see. He needs preseason too. All right, so then we have Rams-Cowboys. I have the Cowboys winning.
I got to go with the Rams. I think they're a solid team, and I think they can hold off the Dallas Cowboys, which hasn't been the best team in a while.
Yeah. Okay, then we have Steelers-Giants. I have the Steelers.
You know what? This is an interesting game for me. I think it's going to be a neck and neck. I don't think the Steelers have a great QB anymore. I think everything is falling apart there. They need to really rebuild. So I'm going to give the Giants this nod, actually. It's a bold prediction, but I think they have a shot.
Yeah, getting back on the Jenner Jones bandwagon there.
A little bit of hope for Jones. That's my goal right there.
Yeah. All right, then we have Titans-Broncos. I have Broncos winning week one.
Oh, man, I got to keep with the Titans with the role that they had in the playoffs. I think they still are a great team, and I have Titans all the way here. So let's see that.
Okay, cool. So I guess that's going to wrap it up for this episode of podcast on the NFL preview. We're going to get back into our playoff predictions in the next one. And we'll talk about other big topics, including the Washington football team's name change. So, Michael, you want to wrap it up?
Oh, thank you, Brandon, for co-hosting this with me. I think, yeah, it's hilarious how we have to say Washington football team now instead of calling them, you know, by the team that they have had for a long time. It's an interesting political awakening that we're having all across this nation. Don't get me wrong, there are stuff that are racist out there, but this is just something that even Native Americans, several different people cared. Like, they told me, like, I have a lot of friends, and they're like, who cares about the Redskins name?
I mean,
it's not offensive to us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and we'll get into that whole entire topic about racism and the team names. That we see, like, and everyone can say, oh, what about the Vikings? Isn't that racist to have Vikings? So, you know, there's stuff to be said on that, but come follow us on all our social media on Facebook, Instagram. Obviously, we'll be posting this in the next day or two when you actually hear us. We're filming this on a Monday, so you'll see it on a Tuesday or tomorrow or Wednesday, obviously. And then our next podcast we hope to have for you guys by next Friday or Saturday is our goal. And that's where we'll talk about racism football. I don't know, by the way, before I close, you saw the Luka Doncic versus what was his name? Hayes, I think it is. On the Clippers?
Harold, yeah.
Yeah. Harold, yeah. There we go.
And before the podcast we didn't upload, I tried diving into the whole, all the you know, things going on in our country.
This was, yeah. Where George it's was. Crazy that he can say the B word and ass, white boy.
Yeah.
But if Luca had said that about and said black boy instead, he would have been suspended. He would have been ostracized, fined, and all that. But because he said white boy, it's a whole entire different game.
It's not a big deal. It's good. Montrezl Harrell apologized, and we need to move. On. We need to understand there needs to be a standard.
There shouldn't be a double standard there. Yeah. So we'll discuss this all in our next podcast. With that being said, my name is Michael Demos. We had Brandon Churon. Thank you for being with us on this podcast, and we look forward to seeing you all again when we do this again. Until next time.